This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's Juju in the paint, shoots over 100, and scores.
He's mode.
That's there all afternoon long.
Doing some work in there right
yes,
now.
He is.
Ty Berry says back court, but no, Berry hit it. Then they run Berry into a screen, and Rice sees it go down, and Rice drains a long triple, and Berry's on the floor. Maybe one of the best in a long time. And Gillespie drops in a triple on the left side. And it's 64-57. Queen goes inside, and Derrick Queen's got another double-double for the afternoon. And this one is all over. The Maryland Terrapins have knocked off Northwestern, avenging an earlier season loss in overtime, 74-61.
Here are the highlights. Johnny Holiday, Chris Knocke, Walt Williams on the call right here on 105.7 The Fan. Stop if you've heard this before. It wasn't pretty, but the Terps pulled away in the second half. They beat Northwestern 74-61. They move up to 11 in the polls today, and they finish second in the Big Ten Conference, so they don't play until Friday at 6:30, a game you can hear right here on 105.7 The Fan.
Yeah, look, it wasn't their most efficient or clinical performance, but they're not all going to be. It wasn't comfortable until it was. You know what I mean? I'd say the first 30 minutes, pretty uncomfortable. Last 10 minutes, not much to see here. That's a really undermanned Northwestern team that's relying on guts and try hard and hustle. But there's not really any scoring there outside of their big man. You know, the kid Berry can hit some threes, but you kind of know.
He had a stretch, and then before and after, wasn't good.
Yeah, and you kind of know to keep an eye on him. And they're very limited, but they play hard for their coach. And they certainly had the Terps on their heels in the first half. And it just, to me, was a little bit, I think the gravity of the moment got to the Terps a little bit, turning the ball over, kind of sluggish in their offense, not able to get things going. You know, another first half I think Jacoby would want back his first halves. Again, I just wish they would settle him into a facilitator role and let the scoring play off of that. When he tries to wear both hats, I think it gets things a little bit off kilter. And it was a big day for Juju, and it was an emotional day in that building. And look, you also know we can't leap around and mess this up. We got a chance to get that 2 seed. And so I think all that had them a little bit on edge, a little bit off kilter in the first half. And then the talent and the superiority took over. And the last 10 minutes were basically a coronation of their season. He was able to empty the bench. All the seniors got their moment. Juju got his moment. And what a magical carpet ride it turned out to be, really, from when they got back from the Pacific Northwest on.
It was a team that was picked in the preseason to finish 10th in the Big Ten, and they finished second. And no one could have seen that coming after that 1-3 start coming back from the West Coast trip. But this game sort of felt like the USC's games, the Rutgers games, where it was close. The Terps were really stopped. 18 turnovers. They were horrible at one point. That was by far and away a season high. Something that has been a little troubling, and you brought it up, Jason, another slow first half. Just 32 points, 20% from three. Julian got going, but he was really the only guy in the first half, and you could tell that was a concerted effort to get him involved on the offensive side. He scored 11 of their first 18 points, but then they were able to kind of just end the game. And Julian got to the line a lot late in the game to put it away. Gillespie hit that three to really cause the dagger there, but they won by 13 points despite not playing their A game. So
it was,
take it.
They were overhyped early, and I can understand why. Senior day, obviously the crowd was into it, and they were super sloppy, especially in the first half. Extra passes, bad passes. As you said, 18 turnovers. That's just not acceptable. And it felt like, what was the game? Maybe it was Rutgers, where they turned the ball over a lot in the first half, and it was close because of that. And you're like, if they just play clean basketball, they're going to run away and hide. Now, they were better in the second half against Rutgers than they were against Northwestern, but they still were not as sloppy and were able to pull away.
It's just really weird in retrospect how this schedule shaped out, because outside of Sparty, like, they caught Illinois. It was a weird point for Illinois. Remember, like, Illinois was on fire, and then everybody's out with turned out to be mono and the flu bug. And then Illinois was right on the precipice of their season, went on the brink there. Mm-hmm. I think they caught Wisconsin at a pretty good time to catch Wisconsin. They caught UCLA. I mean, the coach got himself thrown out of the game. I mean, UCLA was, there were fires in Southern California. Like, they were on an epic road trip. Like, the coach was losing his stuff with the players. He didn't think they were putting in enough effort. Like, you just look at the way it shook out. I think it's somewhat, especially for kids this young, invariable that there's going to be some let up because, like, I mean, they caught Michigan on the ropes. They really have it.
Michigan's become fraudulent.
Like, this Illinois test is going to be...
If they play Illinois.
I think they're going to play
them.
But Ohio State can beat them.
They can, but I like the way Illinois is playing right now. I hope it's Ohio State. But a team that could match them shot for shot, if it is Illinois, that could play at their pace, that take more threes than they should and don't make enough, but still, they've got a big man who can do some things. They've got a guard who's maybe the best player in the conference. Like, that'll be a really interesting test, because I do feel like this schedule just, it ended up, even the built-in practice time and all the midweek and then Sunday.
He didn't like that, though.
He didn't like it, but it worked for them. I mean, it worked. Who they were facing and when they were facing them, they caught a lot of these teams at the right time, including Northwestern at the end, down two starters.
Heck, and you can even look at the Indiana game. Weren't they staging a walkout in the middle of that game?
Yes.
That team might make the tournament now.
Yeah, now they might make the tournament. But if you're Maryland, a lot of the bracketology, and we're going to have on Mike DeCourcy, who has them as a four seed, I think if you get that win against Illinois, I think that locks you into the four seed, but I think it's a swing, because if they lose that game, they probably fall to a five.
I am curious.
Oh, they'll dock him. Not a blue blood.
Juju had 19-11, but 11 of his 19 were at the line. And that pop shot that we had talked about him, he was hitting it all year. About three games ago, it left him, and it still doesn't seem to be there for him. Or any concern about the fact that shot of his has seemed to have disappeared?
I mean, I don't think it's the main thing for him. I'm concerned about, if I have a concern, it's Jacoby Gillespie. I just feel like he's caught a little in betwixt and in between of exactly sort of when to serve his own shot and when to serve the greater good. And I think this team, when they're at their best, and when we look back at games and everybody's in double figures and they scored above 80, everybody's getting touches early. And it really is about establishing their ability to score within a half-court offense as well as on the run. And I think it's Jacoby really looking out for his wing guys on the threes, making sure both his bigs get multiple touches down low. I think long-term success in this tournament will be predicated on that. And I feel like they've gotten away from it. I feel like because his shot has been so hit or miss lately, I feel like there's a part of him that really wants to find out early. Am I on? Am I not? And I think they all start settling for worse looks than they should, and they don't move the ball the way they can.
We have a huge Monday show. Man, we had a busy weekend in local sports between the Orioles and what's going on down there.
What's happening down there?
The pitchers are hurt and stuff. They announced they're wearing those orange uniforms coming up in April 12th. Yeah, I like that. Ravens re-signed Ronnie Stanley, and of course the Terps as they prepare for the Big Ten tournament. But guess-wise, it was alluded to here, Mike DeCourcy from Big Ten Network. We'll talk Terps and the Big Ten with him coming up at 4 o'clock. Moak Hamilton, he's our NBA insider as we head down the stretch in the association. Catch up with him at 4:30. Our own Cordell Woodland talking everything at 5 o'clock. And Jacob Calvin Myers down in Sarasota covering the O's for the Baltimore Sun. He joins us at 5:30.
Yeah, Ronnie Stanley back in the fold. Right player, right price. This certainly qualifies for me, but we will look up.
When you see what Dan Moore got.
Dude. Yeah, no. This was expertly done. We'll look at what we think that means for the rest of the Ravens offense. Obviously, the Orioles pitching is in absolute tatters right now. Get what you pay for.
Not taters, but tatters.
Yes, in tatters. And you want to do everything on one-year deals. Boy, those dudes better be ready. The old guys look good, at least.
Yeah.
The old guys look really good.
Sagano looks incredible.
But they've got huge problems right now. We'll see what Jacob Calvin-Meyer has to say about it. And, yeah, we'll continue to discuss the Terps and their dream season.
So coming up next, we will continue to discuss those Maryland Terrapins and just how far can this team go. We're going to tell you next here on The Fan.
We have not been good coming off bias.
Yeah, that's my any thought
thanks,
of how yeah, it's going to look.
Yeah. Yeah, appreciate that. I was going to go have a beer. Now I'm going to switch to whiskey. No, I mean, going out west was, you know, we had 4 days off because of the New York trip. So that was a really, and then going out west, I thought we played pretty good going into Ohio State. We just missed our free throws. We would have won at Ohio State if we made our free throws. So I think, you know, we're going to take technically 2 days off, but it won't be a full 2 days. It'll be like a day and a half.
So that was Kevin Willard, and he lamented this after the Michigan State game, like too much time off, didn't like the way they came out, and so of course he's going to switch from beer to whiskey because they've got now 6 days off as they don't play until Friday at 6:30, which means pregame coverage starts at 5:30. They will play the winner of Illinois, who plays the winner of Ohio State and Iowa. So it's... They got to wait to find out their opponent. They got 6 days. I don't know, Jason. You've been doing it one way the whole year. Do you switch it up to try to get them more ready after the layoff? Because you didn't like the way they've looked after layoffs.
Well, I think you have to do something differently, right? I mean, there's enough of a sample now, and it's become enough of a thing. And we've heard Willard quickly after some of these games that have been a little off kilter and one half off, the other half better. He quickly alludes to, well, it's been 5 days since we played. It's been 6 days since we've played. Clearly, it's been sticking in his craw. You know, we talked early in the year about, and we talked to Chris Knocke about this and some other, I don't know if we talked to any other former, well, yeah, Patsos, other former coaches about it. Like, at what point do you start traveling differently or changing up when you do your shoot-arounds or adjusting to different time zones and changing your patterns leading into these road games when there was a period of time where they hadn't won on the road in forever and they can't come from behind on the road, right? They don't win close games on the road. And I think Willard has done some of those things. So I think it would be silly and myopic not to think that there is a better way. Being able to figure that out and thread this needle in real time now, I don't know. I mean, they're leaving on a Wednesday, right? So they are trying to make it like not as long. They're going to go on the Wednesday. They're going to have a nice team bonding experience. They're going to get used to the courts there, you know, early. Get used to the surroundings there early. Yeah, I guess you do change the routines up a little bit. It's been a thing.
It absolutely is a thing because you think of some of the Washington game that Kevin Willard alluded to. That was arguably their worst loss of the season. Ohio State, they blew the 17-point lead. And then Michigan State, which was as ugly a first half as they've had all year long. Now, I don't know what they can do different. I'm not sure that Kevin Willard's going to try to reinvent the wheel this week, but it's also important to point out that depending on how far they go in the Big Ten tournament, there could very well be another big layoff heading into the NCAA yes. tournament, especially if they end up playing Friday.
Yeah, well, they're guaranteed a layoff, and if they don't make it to the, like, say they lose Friday, they don't play again until the next Thursday or Friday. So, you got a layoff. He doesn't like the way they've come out, and you can tell it. He was joking about it, but it legitimately is a concern for him because he hated the way they came out against Michigan State after a six-day layoff.
Yeah, and that's a different opponent, and that's that is a unique challenge on a lot of levels, and Sparty throws things at you, including a coach who's seen it all and done it all, that most can't. But, I mean, this was a problem at Washington. I mean, we can go back and look, it's not just the best team in the conference coming in as an underdog with their coach having them, whipped up into a pack of rabid dogs to spoil your 18,000, seater sold out night when there's the building's electric. Like we've seen it happen in half empty buildings against teams that can't hold your jock.
With all that being said, you're not going to apologize for getting the double bye. And this team, more than pretty much any other team in the Big Ten Conference, the less games that you have to play, the better. Because this isn't like the NCAA tournament where you get the day layoff. These are all back-to-back.
Every day.
And with how many minutes the starters log, that plays a big role.
By the way, and I know we've touched on this before, but another quality bench performance from Jordan Geronimo, who continues, and he's like the Cowboy, Jason. He fills the stat sheet, 4 rebounds, a steal, 4 points, getting a little bit done all over, and played some quality minutes.
He had a couple of those big offensive rebounds with the putbacks, and the Terps dominated the glass in that game.
Yeah. The thing that you love about Maryland is, and we've said it before and I'll say it again, there isn't one script. There isn't one template to success for them. They can beat you 65-64. They can beat you 95-94. And they can beat you at score lines all in between. They can beat you fast-paced. They can beat you slow. They can beat you outside. They can beat you inside. At times, have they struggled on the defensive glass and we felt like other teams were too opportunistic with their offensive rebounding? Yes. Generally, they take great care of the ball. Do they sometimes give it away at inopportune times? Yes. Close and late situations, especially in road or neutral settings, still give me a little pause. But they are hardworking, entertaining, diligent. I don't think they feel like they're playing with house money, and I don't feel like they're playing with house money. But I also feel like they've reached a point now where they can be loose, probably isn't the right word. Carefree is probably not the right word, but maybe unencumbered. Like
I don't know if I'd go that far. If this team doesn't make the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, then I think it's a disappointment.
I'm talking about just this weekend. Yeah. No, I'm not talking about the fight.
Sure.
We got to see the draw and all that. And Styles make fights. But I feel like I'm telling them, after all we've done this year, I don't care whether it's Illinois or Ohio State or whatever, like, you know how they like playing. We just heard the clip from Willard a week ago when they were getting a little tight. Was it the Penn State game or was it before that? Where he was trying to draw plays and they're like, we got this.
I think it was Penn State.
I want that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I want that version of them. Yes. Good call. Like, I want that, right? Like, hey, you guys have got us to this point. It's your team. I'll step in if I have to. But go out there. You want to run these guys underground? You think you can score 96 on them? Go for it. For that game.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. And even though they did scuffle and struggle at times in this game Saturday, once again, the Crab Five, all five of them in double figures. And our boy, Selton McGowan, I don't know if we got the IA bump. It was great talking to him on Friday. But he hit some big shots. We thought he'd get to that magical 17, but he did get to 11.
He had his run there.
Yeah, he had another run.
He got the bump.
Eight straight points.
He got the bump, but it was like sporadic.
Yes.
But he still got it.
Yeah, he got it.
He got it. It was kind of late to show up, and then it was there. It's a little bit fleeting.
Yeah.
Maybe he had it and he just decided, I'm going to share it. Like maybe he went into one of the huddles. He's like, hey, man, I just scored 8 off the IA bump. Hey, Rodney, I'm going to kick it over to you.
Yeah.
Right? Are we sure that didn't happen?
Maybe. Hey, Juju, it was 11 for 13 from the line. I will take credit for that. We had him.
I mean, what were they, like 21 to 24 as a team from the line?
23 or 28.
Yeah. Not too shabby.
No.
2%.
Yeah, it's a pretty good day at the office. Juju 11 for 13. That's something. So the Terps do not play until Friday. We know when they play. 6:30. Indianapolis is where the Big Ten tournament is. But they await their opponent as they sit with the double bye. Pregame coverage for that game will be at 5:30. So we have a slightly shorter show on Friday. But coming up next, more big news from the weekend. Ravens make a move. They re-sign Ronnie Stanley. What do we think of this move? We'll give you the terms. That's next here on The Fan.
Well, Ronnie and I did a deal the last time, so that's great. He and I have a good friendship. We've known each other for a long time. He's got a great agent in Kim Miale. Never want to say 100%, but I feel good that we'll have a good, healthy debate, a good process. We're going to meet with Kim in Indy this week, and I'm optimistic that we'll be able to get a deal done.
We are in the legal tampering period, so deals are flying. They don't become official till Wednesday, but money flying around, including offensive linemen, which Ronnie Stanley chose not to take part in as he signed a 3-year, $60 million deal with the Ravens, $44 million of that guaranteed. I do wonder when we see the actual terms, Jason, if there's maybe a year or two added on that just to move to cap space reasons because they like to do that now. But Ronnie Stanley, when Dan Moore gets $50 million guaranteed on the open market, when was it Jalen Moore gets $15 million a year for the Chiefs, and he was, what, Trent Williams' backup? Ronnie Stanley took a bit of a hometown discount to stay here in Baltimore.
Well, look, I don't think it's apples to apples because Ronnie Stanley's injury. Look, when Ronnie Stanley takes the haircut that he took to come back last year, remember, I told you guys at the in real time. He's not doing that in a vacuum, just communicating with one team, right? You don't agree to that until you take the temperature of any team that might be looking for a left tackle, right tackle, whatever, through the course of your interactions at the combine and otherwise. So I'm pretty sure he knew last year that there's a lot of teams who were just red flagging the medical and wouldn't want to do a one-year deal with him last year at $10
million. Yeah.
How much of them 1 year later, knowing that, hey, the year before that, they were rotating tackles. He wasn't even playing regularly as they pushed for a playoff seating. How much would 1 year in his 30s have changed that? Probably not that much, and ultimately not that much. And you're gambling on upside with some of these guys who actually hit the market. With Ronnie Stanley, you're trying to mitigate against disaster, yes, and you're managing downside risk. And so none of that is to in any way minimize what the Ravens accomplished here. You got him basically picking up where the old contract left off.
Sure.
He went from making $20 million a year 6 years ago on a long-term deal to making $22 million for two years.
Yeah.
It's 2 years, $44 million.
Yeah.
So that's a huge win for them. But like, I think it says more about how teams were scared of Ronnie Stanley's extensive injury situation than anything else. And I also think if they like a tackle, even if there's a tackle standing out in the first round, boy, if it's that big of a best player available to them, I still think you got to take it.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what this does, is it really opens you up to that possibility of being a true best player available in the first round, where if Ronnie Stanley would have left, you needed a tackle, and you kind of would have been pigeonholed into getting one. But I think it makes sense for both sides. And I think, Jason, probably both things can be true. I'm sure there were several teams that had a ton of red flags on him medically, but I still think he would have got more than Baltimore.
And Jason, you're probably aware of this too, talking to someone that had some knowledge of this. New England was willing to give him a massive bag, but my understanding is Ronnie had no interest in. He saw New England as a rebuild, and he doesn't like Vrabel, so that was a non-starter for him.
And that's why when Eric DaCosta made those comments that we came into the segment with, it really told me more that Ronnie, at this point, how many more years does he have left? He's been in Baltimore his entire career. Does he want to go somewhere else and start over? He's still got pretty good money. Let's not downplay that. But I think he wants to be here.
Well, he's comfortable with the coaches. He's comfortable with, like, he doesn't have to worry about is this coach going to make an example of me on a Wednesday, and when it's Veterans Day off and we didn't play great the week before, all of a sudden I have to play? To your point about Vrabel and the New England way, where who got coached the hardest in New England?
Tom Brady, yeah.
And it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
Who got made an example of the most in New England?
Tom Brady.
So if Ronnie Stanley's the first big free agent signing of Robert Kraft finally dips back into his wallet, and he wins a bidding war for Ronnie Stanley after Tom Brady left town because they wouldn't buy any players for him, guess who becomes the face of this thing? And they suck.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be good anytime soon. And he's kind of medically on borrowed time.
Well, to your point about medically, he's comfortable here with the coaching staff. Isn't it fair, too, he's comfortable with the trainers and medical staff, too, because we know his history.
I was going to get to that.
Yeah.
It's absolutely what it is. And I've had my issues with DaCosta, but I will say this, and I brought it up last week, or was it 2 weeks ago, when he was speaking at the Combine, like this being a done deal.
Yeah.
He must have shown a deft touch and a bedside manner that, frankly, I think has often been lacking in the Orioles. The human side of this, because it would have been very easy to leave EDC's barbershop, taking a haircut like that, saying, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to play my ass off for $8 million, and I'm going to rub their face in it when I get paid somewhere else. This was the opposite of that. And that's human nature.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll hear that later in the show. And that's not a bad thing, a good thing. That's just life in the deep end of the pool. That's life in the big leagues. Like that's the way that knife cuts. I'm going to do this now, and I'm going to show you. But this is the opposite of that.
Jason, I want to follow up on that for a minute, because we've seen numerous examples of players citing relationships with Eric, which we don't see on the Orioles side. Like, and Mike's only been here a few years, a young team.
He's been here 6 years.
But
they've been GM the same way.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's literally the same timeline.
But Eric has example after example after example of guys that it's fair to say like him and there are guys that probably don't like him too, but there are examples in that locker room of guys that like him and know that it's going to be rough sometimes, but they like dealing with him?
Well, Eric came from Ozzie, who could be tough as nails,
yes,
and who agents hated negotiating with, but that locker, he had relationships in the locker room.
Yes.
The locker room went to war for him. There was a high level of respect. Mike Elias comes from a consulting firm. He comes from a bunch of bean counters who, their legacy is winning a World Series with an asterisk for cheating. Like, that was it. It was cutthroat. It was numbers uber Alice. It was computers over people. That's just, people have written books about it. That's just a fact. That's how they're thought of in the industry. That's part of their complicated legacy. So you tell me.
No, I think you're right.
Is there? Yeah. I mean, so.
And Jeff Luhnow has no people skills.
No one's ever accused him of it.
Yeah. He was the GM of the Astros.
And you could take it back to St. Louis before that.
Yes, correct.
So that's where he's been. That's where he learned. That's where he was raised. And we've seen a lot of these chickens come home to roost.
Bone, we have a poll.
We do. Ravens got ahead of the league year open and secured Ronnie Stanley to what amounts to a 2-year, $44 million deal. Can keep Rosengarten at right tackle and keeps Lamar with the only left tackle he's known on a short-term commitment. What do you think of the deal, Ravens flock? Over 200 votes in. Love it. 68.1%. Like it, 23.1%. Hate it, 8.8%.
You know what's interesting? I voted like it, but then after I saw the Dan Moore and Jalen Moore numbers, I love it.
I really love it.
Yeah, I love it now. Because, like, it's a short-term deal. He could go back to the guy he was 2 years ago, but still at this price point, I love it.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a gamble, but ultimately it boils down to a 2-year commitment. So if you get the Ronnie Stanley that you got last year in 2025, it's a home run at that point. But there is the possibility of going back to the injury.
Here's how I'm looking at it, because of, in no small regard, how well they handled taking him to the barbershop last year. I'm looking at it as a 3-year, $52 million deal for a Pro Bowl caliber left tackle. Because they got through the thing last year to the point where he's willing to do a deal before this crazy market even gets that crazy, in part, and no small part, because of how they handled it last year. So you do the math on that one. Because that's how, if I'm a team, the players always want to sell new, and I get it, the NFLPA, new money average, new this, new that. Well, the team will have paid him $52 million for 3 years, and you already crushed it in the first year. So, I mean, what are we talking about? $17 million a year?
That's nothing. No, you're absolutely right.
For a starting caliber left tackle?
Yeah.
Even if he only plays 14 games next year, even if they have to manage him more next year than this year, and they do rotate at times, I'll still take that gamble.
Absolutely.
It's also huge to have the continuity after overhauling your offensive line last year, replacing three starters, where you know you have you got one of the better bookend tackles in the NFL with Rosengarten and Ronnie Stanley. If they're both healthy and playing at their level, Rosengarten's an ascending player. We know what Tyler Linderbaum is. Falele, we'll see how he continues to develop, and you figure out left guard.
Jason, before we step out, anything, and money is flying. And again, none of this is official until Wednesday. And by the way, none of it official. Milton Williams, it was reported an hour ago, was going to the Panthers. Now he's going to the Patriots. So things happen
money
fast.
Money talks.
Yes. Sam Darnold to Seattle. Anything, Darius Slay just signed a deal with the Steelers. They like old corners. Anything that stands out to you about what's flying off the shelves?
Well, I think Sam Darnold, I mean, it's a quarterback-driven league. This is a really threadbare quarterback market.
Breaking news, sorry. Justin Fields, 2 years with the Jets.
Yeah. I like Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields has upside. I think in this market, you could do worse than Justin Fields. I'll say this. He will help them win more games than A-Fraud did last year.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a Justin Fields guy, but I'm with you on that.
Is it really trending Rodgers going to Pittsburgh at this point?
Who's left? Darnold? What? By the way,
Tomlin must really be a glutton for punishment. He hasn't had, Pickens wasn't enough.
Yeah.
That's Pickens. I deal with Pickens.
Hey, he survived A.B., Le'Veon, and Ben.
And Pouncey together for years on the same side of the ball.
Before we step out, can I just say I'd rather have Geno Smith than Sam Darnold? Is that crazy?
Yeah, because I think when these numbers all come out in the wash, I think Geno's going to be making more money and Geno's older.
Yeah, but I'd rather have him
with the Raiders? I mean,
I'd rather have him in Seattle than Sam Darnold.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, I'd rather have Darnold in the third round pick, because you got to look at it that way. Darnold for less money plus the pick.
See, that's why I come to you.
What would you rather have?
I'd rather have Geno Smith at quarterback, but I hear you.
Yeah.
I'll take the pick. Coming up next... We've got a lot of good news so far. Well, now we get to the Orioles. And what the heck is going on with Grayson Rodriguez? Some necessary roughness next here on The Fan. So, last week was fun with the Orioles. As we, if you were tuning in live in real time, it was interesting because the manager was in traffic. There was a car accident on 75. I guess he stayed behind to watch guys throw bullpens, but he was not there for the start of the Orioles for spring training game. And Grayson Rodriguez was not good, and his velocity was down. And he spoke afterwards and said he was sluggish, and he couldn't get behind the ball, but he'll be fine. And then a day later... About 24 hours later, we found out, he's got some soreness. Now, it's not the UCL. They have given him a cortisone shot and are giving him 7 to 10 days off. But
it's behind the elbow.
Yeah,
huh?
It's behind the elbow. It's not the PRP in the elbow, but it's elbow. And that's never good. So 7 to 10 days, and then we reevaluate.
And it went from triceps to elbow. Mm.
Well, it moves.
Funny. Yeah. And he also came out and said Felix Bautista, who I can recall throwing meaningless bullpens through an entire summer after it was clear that he was going to need Tommy John surgery.
He's not going to be ready.
His velo's down, and he's not going to be ready. And even when he comes back, he's not going to be asked to do the things he did before. And their response to that, knowing all this was possible, was to sign a seventh-inning guy, older, whose role really ramped up in St. Louis last year. And what happened with him, Bone?
He is going to miss months. Underwent arthroscopic knee surgery.
And then they got these two guys who aren't too good at the trade deadline. How's their spring going? Dominguez and Soto. How's it looking for them?
Soto,
the good news
good
is not as bad as Brian Baker.
Yeah, well, Baker was good until he wasn't. Yeah.
Three home runs in one outing.
He was really good until
that. I don't care how
then.
The Jet stream was blowing that day.
He was moonwalking.
I don't care how bad traffic was on the 705 or whatever.
Yeah.
That's a freeway going faster than the 75. There.
Yes.
That's a freeway... Straight over that fence.
Yeah.
So there's all that. And Bradish, who knows?
Yep. Anything you get from him is a bonus.
Yes.
You can't depend on him.
Or so where are you guys on the state of the Orioles pitching? I do a lot of talking on this show. I'm going to listen.
I think I'm very concerned. How could you not be? They didn't go out and bring in a upper echelon guy. They said that Grayson was going to be the ace. Look, it's good that Sagano has looked really good, but it's spring
Morton's
training.
Look good.
Morton's look
Morton's
good.
Look great.
Take it with a grain of salt there. Kramer's going to be Kramer. I would think that Cade Povich is going to be the fifth guy, but we shall see. Finish the year strong, but there's a ton of question marks.
I'm never one to tell them how to run their operation.
Nah.
But boy, I would think you've yo-yoed some pitchers, starter, reliever, starter, reliever, starter, reliever. Tyler Wells is one I can think of whose future is very nebulous. I would think at this point, if you want to learn from lessons, and now your bullpen is your bullpen looks really perilous, and he's, especially when he's only humping it in there for 6 to 7, maybe 9 batters, the velo plays up even more, and he does have swing and miss stuff. I would think you might want, and Cade Povich going back to Norfolk, if he keeps pitching like this, would send a weird message to him, and we don't want to mess with Cade Povich.
No.
We've had a hell of a time keeping pitchers healthy and developing them, right, in a cogent manner around here. I would think the natural, easy thing to do is Suarez, you got to get us some impactful innings out of the pen.
Yes.
And Slim, we're going to keep you on this path you're on, but who knows?
Here's what drives me crazy. They could have signed Sagano and still gone out, instead of giving $15 million to Charlie Morton, giving $25 million or $26 million a year to Nathan Eovaldi. Like, they haven't really done it. Now, that would have taken them to do something they're allergic to, giving a real multi-year deal to somebody.
Who would want to run their team that way?
Yeah, like... And
every other team in Major League Baseball, by the way, including the Oakland A's, will at least keep getting their guys signed to long-term. Yeah. I'm sorry, Sacramento A's.
Yeah, they're just the A's now, where they're going to play in
Sacramento. On this show, they're the Sacramento A's.
Sactown
A's. They're going to play in 115-degree temperatures every day during the summer. But, like, if you would have done that, then I'd feel better about what they've got. But now I'm relying on one guy who's 41 years old, and you're not getting peak out of Charlie Morton, and another guy who's never pitched in the major leagues before, and as good as he's looked this spring, I need to see what he looks like in the regular season. And this guy, who quite frankly, they keep calling him his ace, their ace, but he's really never shown that at the major league level yet, but he can't stay healthy.
Never pitched 125 innings.
He's one thing he has shown at the major league level, he can't stay healthy, and now he's hurt again.
Ken, you brought it up last week on Friday, I think, the if guy.
Oh, I love the if guy.
All of these ifs that we were talking about, heck, even going back a week ago.
Hey, he'll always have February. If guy. You'll always have February. Your team peaked in February.
And we haven't even brought up Gunner and how Jackson's going to play shortstop.
Jackson's playing shortstop today.
Scale 1 to 10, how much concern do you two have about this organization's ability to thread the needle on young pitchers in situations like Grayson, especially one like this where there's now already calls for concern and he hasn't even had one normal spring training outing?
I'm at DEFCON 5, and what's more...
to nurse him through a full season.
Your friend Ken Rosenthal said they're sniffing around Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson.
Now, but you could have had any... And for the people who say it's still early, no, it's late, because all the real pitchers are gone. These are the scraps. These are the leftovers.
Unless you trade.
This is going back in time.
Yeah.
These are guys who were barely good enough 2 and 3 years ago.
And I also want to say, I know it's not the UCL, but anytime you hear elbow... If there's any inkling, have him do the surgery now. Do not have
that.
Happened.
Has that ever happened?
It hasn't, no. But I'm saying...
Has that ever happened around here?
Do not do what you did with Kyle Bradish last year. Delay the inevitable, if that is inevitable. Just have him have the surgery. Don't try to thread the needle.
For a first-rate organization, how many times do we say, please don't do this again. Please don't do that again. Please learn from this. Please learn from that. Surely they learned from this. Surely history wouldn't repeat here. Absolutely, that couldn't happen again.
There's a great line. The only thing they've learned from history is that they don't learn from history. Because they keep doing the same thing. They did it with Bradish. They did it with Batista. They did it.
They had issues with Means.
Yeah.
Means.
Yes, yes. I'd like to talk to him about that.
Wells, Wells
was a mess. Wells was a mess. And we were begging them in real time, just put him in the bullpen. Weren't we?
That's how I recall it.
Yes. Yes.
Save some of them from themselves.
Yes.
Do the right thing.
Alas.
Streamline this process. Make it easier.
Coming up next, we continue with
you
the
You think
order.
Grayson's going to be picking up another pitch on the other side of this, or you think well enough should have been left alone?
Yeah, that was on, too. He's changing his motion.
You think we're done with that now?
I hope so. I'm not confident, but I hope so.
Yeah.
All the young dudes.
A lot of smart people who know about pitching would say the same thing.
Yeah. All the young dudes coming up next. And what do we think of this rotation now, which is anchored by a couple of old dudes? Where are we on the Orioles starting rotation? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.